Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by the Cher to my Sonny, Jason Ruggiero.
Why do I have to be Cher?
Well, I think because you're the better looking of the two of us.
Nice cover.
We all know I can grow a mean mustache, too.
Oh, please spare us.
So, before we get started with everything today, I want to talk about the Cincinnati Reds. Because they've been, they haven't necessarily been an active team over this hot stove period of time, but they've been in the news a lot. And recently, the Reds general manager, Walt Jocketty, has stated that the Reds have enough rotation depth to keep Aroldis Chapman in the bullpen. I wish Bob was kind of here to talk about this, Jason, but since he's not here, what are your feelings about this decision?
Well, I mean, the Reds do have, you know, a fairly formidable rotation. You know, I mean, they gave Bronson Arroyo the boot, so that kind of cleared up spots for, you know, like Tony Cingrani and the guys who were kind of fighting Bronson Arroyo for those last couple spots the last couple years. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm always wary of taking – I mean, I know, you know, what you're going to say, which is, you know, his value would just shoot through the roof if he threw 200 innings instead of 70. But I'm always just a little wary of taking that guy who is so dominant as a closer and just trying to make him into something else now.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And while I do think it's better to try and maximize the value of a player, we've seen Chapman, and he's had an audition in the starting rotation, and it didn't necessarily work out as well for Cincinnati. I think while you definitely have to take a look at, can this guy start, I think it makes sense, you know, and Chapman's come out and flat said, he's just, I want to be in the bullpen, that's where I want to be. And I think at that point, you just kind of have to be willing to say, this is what he is, and we have to accept what he is, which he's probably one of the best 3 to 4 closers in baseball.
Right. Like you said, when the player is like, well, you know, I want to be in the bullpen, I think that pretty much ends the conversation right there.
Right. Exactly. And kind of like you said, too, I mean, you're looking at the Reds rotation with even without Homer Bailey. And now you have Cueto at the top, followed by Latos with Bailey, Mike Leake. And now, you know, Tony Cingrani has that opportunity to thrive in the five spot as well. So, you know, even without Arroyo, the Reds are still doing just fine, and I feel fine with leaving Chapman in the role that he's in. I'm just glad they gave it a shot for the sake of their ball club, trying to maximize that value.
Right, so, and I mean, you know, it would be different if they had a bad rotation.
Yes, right. If they needed a gap to fill, but
they don't.
You know, Bronson Arroyo and his beautiful hair leave town, and they've got somebody stepping right in there.
Well, and you know, there's all the rumors about the Reds possibly trading Brandon Phillips. What do you think they're going to ask for in return for an all-star second baseman?
Yeah, right. I mean, they and that was the, you know, the other thing. The Reds haven't made a move yet this hot stove season, and they're still being talked about like crazy. At one point, Jim Bowden on ESPN had said, "Oh, Brandon Phillips is going to be traded before the end of the winter meetings." And then you know, like yesterday they came out and said, yeah, we're probably not going to trade him. So,
right.
You know, they've been all over the news. And like you said, too, I mean, they have pieces to trade if they want to as well. So,
I mean, if you look at the Reds team, you know, like you're saying, they lost Arroyo and they lost Chu. And I guess they lost Ryan Hannigan.
they lost. Is that addition by subtraction? Is that what you're trying to imply?
Well, I mean, I think they signed, what, Brian Peña to replace him? I think that's probably a better fit for them right now. But regardless, they've done nothing except lose players, and it's still a very formidable team, you know? Like, they're not this team that just, like, has to go out and do something to be relevant, like the Yankees.
Right.
You know, they haven't done anything yet. They're still, with this team, going to probably be talked about, you know, competing for the NL Central again.
Right. I mean, you're talking about looking at now maybe Billy Hamilton gets a crack at that starting center field gig in Cincinnati.
Right.
I think Cincinnati's still in a great position, and I think they've been, you know, pretty fiscally responsible as far as managing their team goes too. So kudos to them, even though I hate those guys and how they hit the Pirates all the time.
Well, that's the thing about Cincinnati and this whole trade, Brandon Phillips. Brandon Phillips, you take him out of that lineup, they don't have anyone to replace him.
Right.
His bat. They can't replace his bat.
Yeah, because I think you're looking at, what are they? They have Skip Schumacher there now backing him up, but...
Right, which is probably, you know, not quite as good on defense, but acceptable. But you're not going to replace the 100 RBIs of that dude.
Yeah. Yeah, the franchise, as we like to call him.
You know that I don't like Brandon Phillips, but that guy was born to hit a baseball.
Right. Yeah. He's a ball player.
So
he's definitely a ball player. Well, I guess I don't know how I feel about Aroldis Chapman being in the bullpen as a Pirates fan. I guess I'm glad he's staying there, because now I only have to see him one inning instead of potentially six or seven. So
yeah.
Whatever. Just please stop hitting our all-star MVP outfielders. Well, on today's show, we're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates, what's been happening this hot stove season with them. We're going to transition over to the Tribe. There's a little more alliteration for you. And we will finish up talking about the hot stove and how it has been sizzling this winter. So let's kickstart off with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And the first thing I really wanted to address was some sad news within the Pirates organization, which was that the Pirates minor league outfielder Evan Chambers passed away a few days ago. Chambers was only 24 years old, and he was the third round selection in 2009 of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He was a Florida native, went to high school down there, college down there. And by all accounts, it seems like everybody who had anything to say about him was only had positive things to say. I mean, all of his teammates, right, you know, expressed their condolences on Twitter. You know, general manager Neil Huntington came out and stated, you know, what a loss it was, not just from a baseball perspective, but just from a good person who was active in the community. And I guess, you know, those things always come as a surprise, because you look at those, you know, those guys, those professional athletes whose bodies are in peak physical condition. And you know, it is always shocking when something like that happens. So for any of you who might be interested or are in the area, there's a funeral service being held Saturday at 3 p.m. at the New Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. It's located at 2122 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue in Lakeland, Florida. In lieu of flowers or anything like that, the Chambers family respectfully requests donations be made in Evan's honor to the Foundation for Dreams and Dream Oaks Camp. You can mail those to 16110 Dream Oaks Place, Bradenton, Florida, 34212. So again, a very, very tragic loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates organization, but you know, again, I think it just kind of goes to show how good of a person he was and the caliber of person he was, that people only had positive things to say about him after his passing. Moving on to some better, more positive baseball news. We're going to start off with the Pittsburgh Pirates acquiring catcher Chris Stewart from the New York Yankees.
Woo!
Yeah, right? Yeah. Way to kick off the hot stove talk there, right? So this may not seem like a big move, but I think it could be a savvy move. I think it could be a potentially good move for the Pirates.
Well, he was, what, $1 million you signed him for?
Yeah, right.
He was arbitration eligible. So yeah. He's $1 million, and is he better as a backup catcher than Michael McHenry?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be an upgrade over McHenry, especially from when you're talking about the defensive perspective of everything.
Right.
I think, I guess when I saw that trade, I thought more of how does that affect Tony Sanchez?
Right. Well, that's the second question.
Yeah. And that's what I'm not really sure how that's going to come out and affect Sanchez. I mean, like I said, from a defensive perspective, Chris Stewart's been great. You know, he's contributed a positive defensive WAR for the last three seasons. You know, when you look at his defensive runs saved, in 2011, he had a defensive runs saved metric of 12, which is phenomenal. You know, last year was more of a neutral defensive runs saved perspective. So, he has nothing to offer with the bat, but he has, you know, something to potentially offer defensively, I guess. And I think, again, it just kind of brings in another veteran presence. I guess I don't really understand it, because I don't understand why you don't want to go to Tony Sanchez as your full-time backup catcher at this point.
Well, that was my next question, you know. So obviously we're not comfortable with Tony Sanchez. That's what this move says to me.
I mean, it would seem to say that. I guess I can't really think of any other reason why you would do that. You don't want to go into the playoffs with Tony Sanchez as your backup catcher. I don't know. I mean, maybe they think he still has stuff that he needs to work on. I think he definitely proved himself to be major league ready with his at-bats that he had this season. So it'll just be something for Pirates fans to keep an eye on over the next couple weeks and leading into the regular season as well.
Well, because this is my point, I guess. I understand, okay, if you're going to go with Sanchez, you're going to want to get someone that's a major league veteran that you can stash in AAA in case there's a problem. But if you let Chris Stewart get non-tendered by the Yankees, if you let Lou Marcin get non-tendered by the Indians, isn't that a guy that then you could get to sign a minor league deal rather than a major league deal?
Yeah.
I'm assuming he doesn't have any options. I guess I don't really know.
I didn't really look too deep into that. I mean, he's 31 years old, so I guess I would assume that he's probably out of options.
Right.
As well. I mean, you just look at his career from 2006, 2007, 2008, recording minimal plate appearances. 2010, you know, he only played in two games, didn't record any. So I'm assuming he's probably out of options, but.
Right. Well, I'm assuming if the Yankees could have stashed him in the minors, they would have. So, I don't know. It's kind of a confusing move, but, you know, not a big deal.
Right, right. Yeah, and then, like I said, it'll probably make itself apparent why they made that move over the coming weeks and, you know, as we start getting closer to spring training. So, just kind of something to keep an eye on. With the winter meetings upon us, Neil Huntington, general manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, has stated that the Pirates are looking for a first baseman or a right fielder. His exact words, and I want to make sure that we're not mincing anything here, his exact words, as reported on the Pirates website, are, "Those are the two most discussed spots where we could upgrade. Bench depth is another place. If there are upgrades out there, we'll take a look." So,
that's... To me, that's saying we're going with Jordy Mercer at shortstop.
Right.
And we're not happy with Gabby Sanchez, and we're not happy with this Jose Tabata, Travis Snyder.
Right. Andrew Lambeau, whatever they're going to throw out there.
Yeah, this Andrew Lambeau amalgam out in right field. So your boy, James Loney, who you've been kind of fawning over ever since free agency started. According to Yahoo's Jeff Passan, he's looking for a four-year, $40 million contract this offseason.
Well, that was, I guess, initially what he was looking for. And now I think they've kind of come to the realization of what the market is and what James Loney is. And they're now more in the range of a three-year, $27 to $30 million deal.
I mean, really, what that is, though, he's still at the same value per year. He just took a year off. You're still talking about $10 million a year for James Loney.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I thought if you could get James Loney for 2 years, I believe it was 2 years, $16 million, I said I felt would be a pretty good deal for James Loney. I think if you have to overpay a few million dollars to keep that third year off there, I would probably rather they do that.
How old's Loney?
Is he 31? Let me pull it up here really quick. I think he's 30 or 31.
Yeah, he's not signing for 2 years then.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think the fact that he's already, he's 29. I'm sorry, he's 29.
Yeah, he's definitely not.
I think the fact that he's already kind of backed off his stance, or his agency has backed off the stance of, well, we wanted 4 years. Okay, we'll settle for three. I mean, I think if you came at him with the right deal, I don't know. If you're going after him for three, I guess I'd rather it be for less money. I'd rather it be more towards the $27 million range. If you have to overpay a few million dollars to get him at that two-year deal, I think that would probably be more ideal. Like, I would rather have James Loney for 2 years, $20 million, than I would at 3 years, $26 or $27 million, and possibly get him just a little bit cheaper.
I don't think that's going to happen, though. I mean, what they Morneau got, what, 2 years and $16
million? $13 million. 2 years, $13
million. $13 million, and he's 10 years older?
Yeah, well, he's probably, I mean, yeah, five years older.
Point is, though, he's coming off one of the, not worst, but he's
least
on the
productive.
Yeah, he's on the downside of his career, right? Whereas right. Loney's coming off maybe one of the best seasons of his career. And definitely a revival season for him, right? Like, a much better year than he had the year before that.
Right, yeah, the year that he, in 2012, when he was, started the season with the Dodgers, got shipped off to Boston.
Right, where the Dodgers decided they had enough of a guy who could hit for average. And
he gets on base. He gets on base. That's what I love about James Loney the most. You know, he's a career 340 on base percentage.
That's why the Dodgers couldn't take him anymore. They don't like guys who, you know, just get on base and put the ball in play. They want, you know, somebody who strikes out and hits a home run and
right.
sucks up more of their salary. He didn't fit in with the plan out there. So they had he doesn't fit in with the Brian Wilson and the Hanley Ramirez and Carl Crawford, so they had to get rid of him. So,
yeah.
Anyways, I think Loney, I mean, Loney, okay, so he says 4 years, $40 million, and he's backed off that. Well, that's like when you go to the car lot and you don't accept the guy's first offer. I mean, this market is insane.
Right.
I think 3 years and $30 million. I think he's going to get that. I think that's definitely in his wheelhouse.
I don't know. I mean, you look at the teams that need first baseman, and how I kind of agree with you in the capacity that I think there are teams, more teams like the Dodgers, who look at James Loney and would not like to pay him that $10 million a year. Because paying him $10 million a year based on his statistical output, you're probably overpaying. But I don't know. I guess I'll be curious to see how the market's shaping up. There's not a lot of teams that need a first baseman with the caliber of production that James Loney can provide. I think he'd be a great fit in Pittsburgh for whatever reason. You know, last year, Clint Hurdle doesn't like to bat Neil Walker in the two spot. You know, he did for a good chunk of the at-bats, but still you'd see him down in that five slot. I think if you have another guy like James Loney, a high OBP guy, you know, James Loney and Neil Walker basically have the same on-base percentage. I think Walker's might be 343 to Loney's 340. You know, at that point, then you have two interchangeable players you could hit in the two hole that are going to be getting on base ahead of your, you know, your 3-4 hitters. I think for the right price, it could be a great value for the Pirates.
Do you think James Loney's better than Adam Lind?
Yes, I do. If you were giving me the option of two, just in a vacuum, even just saying, would you rather sign James Loney or sign Adam Lind, you know, taking out how you'd have to acquire Lind, I think I would rather take Loney over Lind, knowing the production level that you're more than likely going to get for Loney. I mean, you look at Loney's career in 2012 is definitely the outlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Relative to the rest of his career, you know, for whatever reason, that was just a down year for him. You know, his career line, 285, 340, 421, it's not sexy. It's not a ton of power, but it's, you know, a good average. It's a great on-base percentage. You know, his OPS plus career-wise is 106. I mean, you're getting above average production from him. I think I would take Loney over a player like Lind, even in a vacuum.
So what my reason for using Adam Lind is that the Blue Jays had to pay $7 million to retain Adam Lind. And I would agree. I think James Loney is a better player. I'm assuming, you know, I don't follow the Blue Jays real close, but I'm assuming that's an arbitration thing because it's 1 year. But I'm telling you, man, free agents are expensive.
Yeah, they are.
Mark Reynolds was $5 million.
I think we even talked about this at the beginning of the season, and you like to remind me of this all the time. When the Indians signed Casey Kotchman
That's right. He was $3 million.
for Casey Kotchman, who's like probably who's probably contributing negative value to your club. It cost you
Exactly.
$3 million to get a negative contribution.
Right. I don't know, man. I know we're spending a lot of time on this, but the tiers of the free agent market for first baseman, I think, is Napoli is probably at the top, followed by Kendrys Morales, and then James Loney.
Yeah.
So somebody's gonna pay Napoli stupid money, okay? I mean, it's probably gonna be the Red Sox because the Red Sox have money to burn, and now they have to, you know, keep up with the Yankees.
Right,
But
now that Ellsbury's gotten away.
right, and then someone is going to just ridiculously overpay Kendrys Morales as well. I'm positive because he hits home runs. So, you know, someone will open their wallet for him. And then, you know, when the music stops, a couple people that need first baseman will be left looking at James Loney and Mark Reynolds and Kevin Youkilis. So I think he's going to get paid.
Yeah, I mean, there is a point where I think signing James Loney doesn't make sense. I mean, I think if you start
I
looking
mean,
at past the $10 million a season mark, you're not getting your value out of your player at that point.
don't get me wrong. I think James Loney would be a good fit for all the reasons you said on the Pirates. And I think, but I just think they're gonna have to commit at least 3 years and $8 million a year to him.
That I could handle. We go 3 years, $8 million a season. I'd be okay with that. We go over 3 years, $8 million a season, or 2 years over.
2 years isn't gonna happen, man. It's never gonna happen.
Yeah, it's probably not going to. But 2 years at like $11 million a season, I think, is where I would stop feeling comfortable on the on that end.
Here's my, I think in order to get it down to eight, it's gonna have to be 4 years. And it's probably gonna have to be eight average value. Like the last year is gonna be like 14 or something stupid.
Yeah, right. At that point, I'd say let's walk away and let's fill it with Andrew Lambeau and wait until we can find a more cost efficient option.
Oh, Andrew Lambeau, let's not get started on that. Okay.
No, Lambeezy. All right, let's move on. Let's move on. So Neil Huntington also brought up an interesting point about free agents and the Pirates farm system. And I feel like if you've been a Pirates fan, you kind of intrinsically know this because it's come up in discussions with me and other Pirates fans. But Neil Huntington said that, and I'm just going to paraphrase here, no direct quote, but he said like a couple years ago when they had to go get Russell Martin or Clint Barmas, they didn't have capable internal replacements, so they had to go out and they had to fill those spots externally, you know, via free agent, via trade, you know, however they were choosing to fill those spots, and now they have capable internal replacements. They have ways that they can make the club better without having to go out and overpay to bring guys in. And I think while the Russell Martin signing was a good signing, I think it showed progress in Pittsburgh, not only from the financial standpoint where they're willing to go out and spend on free agents, but it also showed progress from an organizational from the way the organization is viewed by other players. You know, that someone like Russell Martin, who was coming from an ultra competitive Yankees team, was willing to sign with the Pirates, I think showed the level of competitiveness that's been in Pittsburgh. And I think that's a good signing for the organization because it shows the players we're a highly competitive team with highly competitive salaries if you're a good fit and, you know, players want to come play here. I think it's a good thing overall that Pittsburgh was able to make those moves from a baseball perspective and an organizational perspective.
Right. And I think though, you know, when you don't have someone to fill that spot internally, someone you're not comfortable running out there for whatever reason, that's when you're really over the barrel, because that's when you gotta sign Casey Cashman for $3 million. That's when you have to sign Clint Barmas for way more money than you want to.
Right, exactly. That's how a guy like Clint Barmas ends up with a 2-year, $10 million deal.
Because you don't have anyone.
Yeah, there was no one. Now, I think knowing what Pittsburgh knows now about some of their current players, if you could ask them, you know, hey, let's take a time machine back and go tell yourself to make a different decision, they probably wouldn't sign Clint Barmas for $10 million.
Right.
But you know, like this season, they're going into it. You know, Barmas is walking. They might take a stab at re-signing him, but even if they sign Clint Barmas, they're going to be re-signing him as a backup to Jordy Mercer.
Right.
So, you know,
I'm very curious to watch and see how Jordy Mercer does this year.
well, and that's the other thing that I didn't even mention about James Loney, but James Loney is a good defensive first baseman, and he's someone like that's going to help out a kid like Jordy Mercer. You know, if you stick Gabby Sanchez over there, who by all defensive metrics is not a good first baseman, your shortstop and your other infielders are going to suffer. You know, those throws that Pedro Alvarez are making where he's barehanding it and one hopping it there, or, you know, airmailing it.
I don't know if anybody but Stretch Armstrong can save those Pedro Alvarez throws, but I know what you mean. I mean, when Pedro puts it up in the bleachers, there's nobody's gonna see.
He's looking at some little filly in the third row, like, hey, you want a ball, sweetheart?
Yeah, but yeah, I know what you mean. You know, the difference between when Nick Swisher plays first base and Carlos Santana plays first base is huge.
Right. You don't ever see as Drubal Cabrera coming off the field giving Nick Swisher a lecture about playing first base.
Yeah, well, you don't usually see a dribble lecturing anyone, because usually he makes enough of his own mistakes. But yeah, yes, you're right. I mean, and Nick Swisher is no, you know, defensive wizard out there, but he's so much more adept at picking balls out of the dirt, stretching, you know, getting back on the bag. Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And if you can make a guy like Jordy Mercer work because of that, you know, that's something you got to factor in when you're talking about paying somebody.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, okay, well, if we go with Gabby Sanchez, how much are we going to lose in defense, you know, that we would maybe then have to get a different shortstop, because, or at
Right.
least a defensive replacement shortstop that we can use late in the game, because we don't trust this kid.
Oh, I smell a good Ben Jedlicek tweet coming up.
Oh well, I don't know. Jordy Mercer is going to be interesting. That's all I'm going to say. It's going to be an adventure.
Yeah. Well, you know, his bat plays, that's the one thing that is positive, at least in knowing that he's going to be a positive offensive contributor. You know, he looked serviceable defensively, you know, when you were watching him last season. Like, I thought it was going to be a disaster, quite frankly, and I was very pleased at how well he played at short with his limited playing time there. You know, by the end of the season, he'd kind of taken over that job, but so I think that's something else you do kind of have to factor in is, you know, if you're signing a guy to play first base, how much does he help your infielders?
Right.
Couple other things. Pittsburgh is still working. I'm putting this in air quotes, working through the process with AJ Burnett.
He's not coming back.
The more and more you hear everything that people are saying, the more it seems like he's not.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of off season left.
Yeah, and especially for a guy like AJ who's not gung ho about he's in everybody's defense in this whole AJ Burnett case, everybody's been very clear with all parties involved from all angles about what everybody wants. Like AJ Burnett has said from the beginning, "Eh, I don't know how much longer I want to play." And Neil Huntington said from the beginning, "Eh, we don't know how much we want to pay you."
Right.
Everybody's just kind of like, "This is how it is." It's like a very respectful breakup. Like you know, you have that girlfriend where like the breakup is just awful and you yell at each other and you hate each other. And then you have like this nice breakup where they're like, "I respect our differences. I think it's just time that we go our separate ways."
Right. Well, the fact of the matter is, though, if AJ leaves, things get a little dicier. A lot
Well,
dicier.
that's what the media's been saying a lot. And Huntington came out and said, to his credit, standing up for his players, that people have written off Jeff Locke, and he doesn't really buy that. Now, here's where you kind of have to dig into the whole semantics of what he's saying. Neil Huntington has said that we feel he's going to be a very capable major league starter next year.
Yeah, well,
Now,
capable.
capable, right, a capable major league starter.
A
And
three
that's
or a
not,
four.
it's not like a backhanded compliment. I think it's just kind of saying, like, this guy's a major league caliber pitcher.
I don't have a problem with that, but if AJ leaves, okay, so you got Locke, so he should really be like a three or a four.
Yeah, more like he's the good number four.
Right, like three is like the top of his game, you know?
Right.
Okay, then you've got Wandy. I don't know about his arm.
Yeah, arthritis in the old elbow, that doesn't instill a lot of confidence.
I don't have a lot of confidence in that. Okay, Gerrit Cole. He was great. You know, you always had that little reservation because he's young, you know, and this is gonna be his first full year after a very demanding first year. So you have to be a little leery of, you know, is there going to be a little regression this year?
Do you don't try and rain on my parade here, Jason. He's gonna be an all-star Hall of Fame caliber stud at the top of this rotation from day one.
Anyways, and then you've got Liriano. Can you trust Liriano?
Mean, you have to.
I mean, I'm
I
not saying you don't bring him back, you don't, but like in the really in the deep recesses of your brain, you have to wonder.
You think about all the years where he wasn't a Cy Young caliber pitcher and what they were like.
Exactly.
And he's had two like really good years. Oh, they were fantastic years.
Yeah.
But he's had like seven not really good years.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not, listen, the Indians are in the same boat. Okay, like you can doubt that rotation till next March, and I will. But I'm not saying you should pay AJ what he wants because he's gonna be a budget buster probably, you know? And at this age in his career, is it really worth that? Probably not. You know, you probably are better off putting your faith in those guys and relying on guys like Jameson Taillon and who else? Nick Kingham
Right.
to kind of prop this rotation up. But what I'm saying is the rotation was one of the biggest reasons, maybe the biggest reason, along with the bullpen, for the Pirates' success last year.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, here's what I will say, and here's what I will propose to you. If I read this rotation to you, which would be probably considered the primary rotation for the Pirates last season, where you're going AJ Burnett, Francisco Liriano, Gerrit Cole, Jeff Locke, and Charlie Morton. So that's your five-man rotation last year.
Right.
You know, you could swap in Wandy Rodriguez at the beginning of the year or Charlie Morton at the end of the year, however you want to,
Or
consider
James
that.
McDonald, whatever you want to do.
Well, I think we all would like to forget James McDonald. So we have that rotation, and then looking at this season, we're going to be coming out of the gates with Francisco Liriano, Gerrit Cole, Charlie Morton, Jeff Locke, Wandy Rodriguez. Based on last season's performances, the most recent performances we have from these guys, I don't feel that much worse about this year's rotation than I did about last season going into it.
I know what you're saying, and that's the same argument I've seen people use online for the Indians rotation. You know, basically, like, it's not any more of a question mark than it was last year.
Right.
Well, yes, But I mean, as we just said, you can't just factor in Liriano's performance last year.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to consider the other 7 years when he wasn't a Cy Young caliber pitcher.
And if you want me to factor in Wandy's performance last year, do you want me to factor in the good part or the hurt part?
Well, here's the wild card where you're looking at this five-man rotation, and this is what you have to consider. And this is what Pirates fans were considering last season with the rotation as well. You know, at some point this season, Jameson Taillon's probably going to get a crack at that rotation. It's almost eerie how him and Gerrit Cole have progressed kind of on the same track. You know, where they're not putting up phenomenal numbers, but they're working on things that are going to make them better major league pitchers. You know, with Gerrit Cole, it was always developing that third pitch, the location of the fastball, all that stuff. The same thing with Taillon. You know, it's developing that third pitch, it's locating the fastball, and that's the kind of stuff that they're working on that hopefully will translate to major league success as early as All-Star break next season.
No, I mean, and I agree with that, but I mean, the answer to your question is it's a push, I guess.
Right. I mean, do you feel worse about, and I guess this is kind of a good question to ask you as a, you know, Pirates fan outsider. Do you feel worse about the Pirates rotation going into this season after looking at how their rotation finished up last season? Like, I don't think there's that much regression. What you lose with AJ Burnett, do you make up with a whole season from Gerrit Cole? Or you know, a whole season from Charlie Morton?
I guess this is what it boils down to. Going into last season, there were some question marks about some of those guys in the rotation, right? I mean, we didn't know how Jeff Locke was going to perform. You thought
Kyle McPherson.
Kyle McPherson would be replacing him before, too long.
I thought he was just going to outright beat him out for that spot.
Right. So, then you've got blah, 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 blah. Liriano, who, breaks his hand or whatever, pounding on his child's door or whatever that ridiculous story was. So you at that point, you've got a lot of bad years and no recent good years from Liriano. So you're even less optimistic, maybe, right? The problem is, it's the same problem the Indians rotation is having. I think it's uncanny how similar the two are. They overachieved last year. Maybe, right? We don't know. But they did much better than what we expected, right? Did you expect Francisco Liriano to actually get his name mentioned in a Cy Young discussion?
Oh, no.
Did you
No.
expect him to get his name bandied about for comeback player of the year?
No, oh, absolutely not.
Right. So he vastly went beyond your expectations. Same with Jeff Locke, right? So
Oh, yeah.
this year, in order to reach that same level, those two players will have to reach those same career plateaus that they've never really reached before. I mean, Liriano has touched that, but as we said, there's been a lot of grim years in between.
Some lean years.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's cool. It's Corey Kluber. Okay, Corey Kluber had a good year. Can we really believe Corey Kluber is going to have that? That's not going to be Corey Kluber's career year. That's going to be Corey Kluber. Like, can we believe that Francisco Liriano is going to do that again? We don't believe Jeff Locke's going to do that again. I don't.
No, I mean, I definitely don't think. I think if you're looking at Jeff Locke and thinking he's going to perform like the All-Star first half again, I think you might look at a more balanced season from Jeff
No,
Locke.
right. It's somewhere in between. Like, if you take his total performance for the year, like what it averages out to, yeah, that's probably something similar that you could expect from Jeff Locke.
What was I was constantly saying this with Jeff Locke. When people were all Oh, just so super excited about Jeff Locke. If at the beginning of last season someone told you that Jeff Locke would throw for a 3.8 ERA, pitch you close to 200 innings, and win you, I don't know, like 10 games, people would have been thrilled with that.
Oh, yeah. People would have been like, oh, please, thank you. Yes.
Right.
That would be wonderful.
So, you know, he threw a 3.5 ERA, got 10 wins, threw 166 innings.
And then in the last 40 innings, just he got 7 ERA. But
just got destroyed.
I'm not saying the Pirates rotation is going to be bad. I'm just saying that, to me, it's uncanny that how similar the two teams are in this situation. Their rotations perform much better than expected and probably played a large role in their success. And this year, both teams have, the Indians more so, lost pieces of those rotations and are counting on players to have career years again, or basically prove that those aren't career years. That's how it's going to be. You know, right. That's the kind of player that they are.
Well, let me tell you one thing that might make the Pittsburgh Pirates rotation a little bit better, which Jeff Passan has been talking about this like crazy on Yahoo, claiming that David Price is a potential trade target.
Oh boy.
For the Pittsburgh Pirates. For the record, I hate this. I loathe this. For what I love about the Giancarlo Stanton trade, I hate about the David Price trade. I want nothing to do with it.
How much would you have to unload for David Price?
Well, think about this. For James Shields, it took Will Myers and Jake Odorizzi. I mean, Will Myers, the best hitting prospect in baseball, plus Jake Odorizzi, a good pitching prospect. So, I mean, are we talking Austin Meadows and Jameson Taillon?
Oh.
Are we talking? Yeah, oh, I vomited in my mouth when I said that.
You know who you should have got in on? Doug Fister. You could have had him for a bag of balls. And
yeah, I was like, what the? What? Why don't we go get David Price? We could get Doug Fister for Jordy Mercer and our best pitching prospect.
No disrespect to Lombardozzi and the other players the Nationals traded, but James Shields is not any better than Doug Fister. He's not. And the Royals gave up one of the best prospects in baseball for James Shields. And the Nationals gave up Ryan Lombardozzi and some guys they had laying around.
Yeah, yeah, Steve Lombardozzi.
Steve Lombardozzi and, you know, like you said, their fifth best pitching prospect, and were able to talk the Tigers out of the guys they really wanted.
I mean, everybody keeps saying like, oh, Dave Dombrowski, you got to trust him. I mean, I guess.
I disagree with that statement completely, because Dave Dombrowski, all he knows how to do is spend money. Trading, horse trading, that's not his specialty. I see the same things. Like, you look at, the big money general managers, they don't do well in trades. That's not where they excel. It seems like they excel at opening up the checkbook, right? Like, that's how they improve their team, not by making shrewd trades. Because it seems like, again, like, Dombrowski was fixated on dumping salary, presumably to sign Joe Nathan, and it was just like, I'm clearing the salary. I don't care what I get. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't trust Dave Dombrowski if I'm a Tigers fan.
I certainly don't feel good about that.
He spent hundreds of millions of dollars and continually produced a team that can't deliver in the playoffs. He spent hundreds of millions of dollars and until this year refused to sign a real closer.
Oh my God, this is like a soapbox. We should add a soapbox for this one, Jason. If I knew you were getting fired up, I'd have had the soapbox ready. Soapbox.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think signing a real closer is probably what the Tigers needed to do. Oh, I don't know, 4 years ago.
But, yeah, I would agree with that. And now they've given 39-year-old Joe Nathan a 3-year deal.
Yeah, they should have signed Joe Smith and made my life miserable.
Just sticking it to you every time.
Salt in the wound.
Yeah.
I mean, because this is the thing. I've watched so many Tigers-Indians games. I never gave up hope because they always had a bunch of chumps in the bullpen. And I'm not going to say that Joe Nathan is, you know, the same Joe Nathan of 10 years ago, but he's light years ahead of Joaquin Benoit and Phil Koch.
I thought you were going to throw Bruce Rondon out there. I was getting nervous for our Seawolf fan base.
He's ahead of Bruce Rondon now.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Because he can find the glove. But as far as overall talent, well, that could be debated.
So, by the way, all of this conversation just evolved for me talking about how I don't want the Pirates to trade for David Price.
Yeah.
Which I still don't want them to do after this conversation.
Yeah.
But apparently it's being bandied about.
Bandied about. I think somebody's going to trade for David Price. That seems like a very Rays thing to do, unload David Price.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, they're absolutely trading David Price this offseason.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on to the Tribe, because we've been talking about the Pirates for way too long. The first thing I want to talk about was how much it stung when Scott Kazmir signed a 2-year contract worth $22 million.
Well, you know, kind of...
Did that sting at all, or are you just like, wow, we really did not lie down on the grenade with that one? To me, that seemed like a ridiculous contract.
It's a lot. It's too much. You know, I mean, it's definitely one of those deals where you sit there and go like, yeah, I'm not paying that.
And the A's made that deal.
The A's they're big money now, man.
Yeah, all of a sudden they like ran into a bag of money just lying on the street or something.
Well, I'm telling you, it's the conversation you and I had on the phone the other day that I won't resuscitate here because it was half an hour of me ranting. But it's I think Billy Bean is coming to the realization, just like Chris Antonetti, I think, is as well. You can't put fannies in the seats rebuilding every 3 years, because teams make money off season ticket holders, and season ticket holders aren't going to pay to see a bunch of guys who should be in AAA. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And that does long-term damage to your team. And, I mean, Billy Bean's got a fair share of problems with, you know, Oco Coliseum.
Yeah. Like maybe they should have spent that money on a new sewer line or something.
But you know, that's a different matter. I mean, we've seen this. We've seen this to me. It's you know, we've seen Billy Bean. He's trying to be ahead of the curve. You know, nobody thought he would spend for Yoenis Cespedes either, and all of a sudden he plunked down some serious money for that guy. I mean, he'll spend when you don't expect it. That's what I always seem to think about Billy Bean, right?
Yeah.
It's like, all of a sudden, he's like, oh, yeah, I got some money here. Scott Kazmir, you want to come pitch in Oakland? $22 million? Chris Antonetti's like, no, thank you. No.
Yeah.
Sorry, Scott. It's been real, but no thank you.
I'd feel okay about that. Now, what's going on with Carlos Santana in third base?
Well... I think
what are these crazy shenanigans?
I think we talked a little bit last time about how Carlos Santana was going to take some reps at third base.
Right, yeah.
From what I've read, this is apparently something that Santana brought up. Basically, he approached the club. This was in the Plain Dealer. I can't remember if it was Paul Hoynes or Terry Pluto. Probably Paul Hoynes. He approached the club about finding ways to play the field more. Basically, he's like, you know, I don't really want to DH all the time. I mean, I will, but I'd like to actually play baseball every once in a while. And they said, well, you know, we're kind of looking at Yan Gomes to catch more, and we kind of got a lot of money invested in Nick Swisher. So what about third base? So they both agreed that they would try to give him some reps at third this winter, and he's actually going to be activated for his Dominican Winter League team later this month. And right now he's in the Indians Dominican Baseball Academy working at third base. Is he going to start every game at third base? No. Is he going to start half the games at third base? I would be shocked. Could he maybe start 20 or 30 games there? I think. But the problem is, you know, he was moved from third base 7 years ago because he struggled with the position. I'm not sure that he, 7 years later, is in any better physical shape to handle it. I mean, I don't know. It would be wonderful. Don't get me wrong. It would be wonderful if he could play third base, because then they could open up the DH slot for a guy like, you know, Jesus Aguilar. But I just don't see him playing there very often. I think they still need to give Chisenhall a chance, and I think Avilas is going to get a lot of playing time there. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Don't pencil him in as your starting third baseman on the first day of the season by any means.
Oh, dude, I tell you what, my fantasy team would love that third base eligibility.
It'd be great for the Indians, but I'm not going to hold my breath. What's not great for the Indians is that they shut down Jose Ramirez for the winter with a finger injury.
Uh-oh.
You know, like most winter ball injuries or anything, there's not a lot of information. So we just kind of have to hope this is nothing serious and that this is just a precaution.
Yeah, he was probably like, oh, I got a hangnail. Right. Like, oh, shut him down.
Right. I mean, he had a very successful year moving from skipping high A, starting the year in double A, and ending the year in Cleveland. So he had a very successful year. He's definitely in the conversation to make the team next year. So I hope they're just playing, you know, playing it cautious with Jose Ramirez. They did not tender a contract to Lou Marcin on the arbitration contract deadline on December 2nd. So he is a free agent now.
Can we play the taps horn right now? Can we put that drop in there?
No, he didn't play enough. There's a cutoff. You got to have 100 at bats to get the taps.
All right, fair enough.
They did tender a contract to everyone else. So Drew Stubbs, Blake Wood, Frank Herman, Josh Tomlin, those guys all got tender contracts. I was happy to see Blake Wood be tendered a contract because they've invested a lot of time rehabbing him from Tommy John, and I don't think it would be wise to just cut him loose at this point. You might as well, you know, see what you can get out of him. And they signed him to the minor league minimum as soon as they tendered him a contract, or the major league minimum. So, you know, it's not like they're investing lots of money in him or anything. I mean, the kid can throw 100 miles an hour. You might as well give him a chance, right?
Yeah, not a lot of those guys just walking around.
It's the Bruce Rondon strategy. Kid throws fast, we might as well give him a chance. If Blake Wood was in the Tigers organization, he'd be the closer.
Right now.
Now, here's a question for you. Do you think it's strange all the movement in the hot stove and we've not heard anything about Ubaldo?
That is kind of odd.
Nothing. Not only Ubaldo, but okay, 13 players received a qualifying offer, all right? McCann got signed by the Yankees for stupid money, and Ellsbury got signed by the Yankees for stupid money. You see a pattern here?
So, I was connecting those two.
So of the 13, only two players who got the qualifying offer got signed. Three of those 13 were starting pitchers, Jimenez, Hiroki Kuroda, and Ervin Santana. I haven't heard anything about them.
I heard the Yankees offered Kuroda a one-year deal. and that's it. That's all I've heard from anything about Jimenez, Kuroda, or Ervin Santana.
I mean, obviously, yeah. Things might change at the winter meetings, but it's just kind of odd.
Yeah, I mean, the market's really been set kind of quickly, you know, for the position. You're going to pay for a bat now, and, you know, the verdict is still kind of out. Like, what's it going to cost to get one of those caliber pitchers?
I mean, if it's going to cost $222 to get Kazmir, what's it going to cost for these three?
Right. I mean, their price has to be through the roof. I don't
I mean, it's
going to seems like teams are just waiting for somebody else to set the market for, like, oh, how much are you going to pay Ubaldo Jimenez? Well, this is how much Irvin Santana's worth. Like,
right.
I don't know.
Well, that, right. When one goes, then you'll probably hear more about the others. Like, now that Ellsbury has signed, right, we hear lots of rumblings about Chu and Cruz and Granderson. But, I mean, we'll see if these guys get the poison pill treatment from that qualifying offer, you know, because only the Yankees have dipped into that pool. And so now, kind of like what the Indians experienced, they've already given up picks. So what do they have to lose to sign more of these guys?
Yeah. I mean,
the Yankees don't care about draft picks.
Yeah, clearly.
And they've already given up two of them. I don't know. It'll be interesting. But I just find that strange. I'm not saying that Jimenez is going to end up back with the Indians, but every day you don't hear his name, I think the chance grows by like 0.0001%.
Is that a good thing for you? Like, would you be happy with Ubaldo coming back to Cleveland?
I think it depends on what the contract is.
Yeah. I mean, he's turning down, you know, he's turning down qualifying offers. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be more than 1 year and $14 million. So,
well, you know, it's going to be more than 1 year. I mean, Michael Bourne turned down a $13 million qualifying offer, and I think he got 4 years, 48.
Right. I mean, that's – so you know, to bring Ubaldo back, it's not going to be cheap. I don't know. Like, and again, I know there's not a lot out there if you're looking to sign players, and I know you're going to pay a premium on the market, but I don't know. I guess I've got that little small market raised Moneyball type philosophy in my head where – boy, that signing a player like that for a team like Cleveland, or, you know, as a Pittsburgh fan, a team like Pittsburgh, that scares me. I don't like that.
You can always unload him on the Yankees. They don't mind.
Yeah.
Which, oh, that's a whole other rant I can get on. Okay, so speaking of the winter meetings, the A's, which we just talked about, are reportedly looking to deal Brett Anderson next week. If I'm the Indians and the price is right, and by price I mean I'm not paying a whole lot of his salary,
yeah,
I'm interested, because he's been a huge injury risk, but man, when he's healthy, he's put up some really solid numbers. On the flip side of that, though, go ahead.
Nothing. I was just going to say that, what is Anderson? He's under contract for $8 million this season.
I have it up somewhere here. Hold on.
I think it's $8 million this season, and then
$12 million next year.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to throw in money. If they're not throwing in money, I'm not interested.
Right.
You know, they can take that contract and just eat it for all I care.
Right.
Who I am more interested in is Jeff Samardzija.
Ooh, yeah, Jeff Scrabble.
Yeah, I mean, because it could drive me crazy trying to type Samardzija and Zepchinski all night.
Yeah, that'd be you'd have to copy and paste those ones, I think.
Yeah. So he's in his first year of arbitration eligibility this year. So he's controllable longer. Although, you know, he's going to get a raise every year with arbitration, it's going to be more controlled than the $8 and $12 million you're looking at with Brett Anderson.
Right.
You're going to have to give up more.
Right. Well, here's the thing, though. You, much like the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Cleveland Indians have the prospects to move if they want to. I mean, like you said, they just had a player skip high A, make it all the way to the majors in Jose Ramirez, who's one of four or five potential major league caliber middle infield prospects that you have.
Right. And I mean, we know that the Indians were interested in Garza when he was on the trade block. And the rumors that swirled then were that the Cubs have always, I don't want to say coveted, but coveted Ronnie Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Ronnie Rodriguez is a guy that with Jose Ramirez and Lindor and Wendell and Gonzalez and all, I mean, They have so many middle infield prospects. I love Ronnie Rodriguez, but you wouldn't even miss him.
Right. That's what I was just gonna ask. Would you mind if they traded a player like that to acquire Jeff Samardzija? And your answer to that is no.
I think they have to, right? I mean, you can't play all these guys.
Oh, that is such a sexy trade. I love that trade. I hope they make that trade.
But I mean, listen, you can't play all these guys. Even if you just struck gold. I mean, first of all, the reality, some of them are going to wash out. So you need to trade them before they do, right? I mean, prospects are commodities.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're currency, man.
Some will wash out. The trick is to unload them on someone else before they do, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm not saying Ronnie Rodriguez is going to wash out, but they obviously have chosen to hitch their wagon to Jose Ramirez. So Rodriguez is the closest to being ready behind Ramirez.
And
So
I don't think he's taken over for Lindor, quite frankly.
no. That's what I'm saying. He's the expendable guy. Now, obviously, Ronnie Rodriguez isn't going to get it done. You know, you're probably going to have to include someone like Carlos Moncrief, which pains me a little. But the Indians need pitching.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, and that's the funny thing, too, when you mention all these names that could be put together in a potential deal to acquire a player, you'll notice none of those names mentioned are pitching prospects.
No, they don't have any of those.
Because I feel like you could offer them your best pitching prospect and they'd be like, who?
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to trade Jeff Samardzija for Cody Anderson. That's not going to.
Right.
So, but I mean, basically, if Theo Epstein wants any names that don't involve Francisco Lindor, Clint Frazier, I would not like to trade Tyler Naquin, but I could be persuaded if I didn't have to give up a whole lot of other things. You know what I
Ooh,
mean?
a Ronnie Rodriguez, Tyler Naquin package for Jeff
Oh,
Samardzija.
that hurts a little. I'd rather do Carlos Moncrief. Oh, it hurts. It hurts. If I'm going to trade Tyler Naquin, I'd rather give up someone not as advanced as Ronnie Rodriguez. You know what I mean? So
But again, look at the market, man. Last year, what did it take to get James Shields? It took an A caliber prospect and a really, really good pitching prospect. I think that's what you gotta start considering when you're trading for a premier starting pitcher.
what about now? Wait a minute, you're forgetting about Doug Fister.
That is clearly an anomaly.
Okay, so Ronnie
This is.
Rodriguez and okay, Carlos Moncrief, maybe. I could be persuaded.
Okay, that's what I was curious about. Anything else on the tribe front?
Not really, you know, but I mean, I don't want to get into a long discussion about the Indians rotation like we did about the Pirates because we're running out of time, but all these guys we're talking about, Samardzija, Anderson, whatever else is on the scrap heap somewhere. Not that Samardzija is on the scrap heap, but you know what I mean.
Right, yeah.
We're talking about the last spot in the Indians rotation. You know, so even if we get Anderson, which again, I wouldn't be happy unless we gave up not very much and they covered some of that salary. I know he's an injury risk, but you're talking about like Anderson, Bauer, Carrasco, Tomlin, Cody Anderson, and TJ House to find a fifth starter. Like, it's not, you know, we're not like saying Brett Anderson is going to be our number two starter or something like that.
Right.
You know, we're trying to fill a spot with Brett Anderson. Samardzija, obviously, that's a guy that he can change the course of the franchise a little bit because you pair Samardzija and Masterson and Salazar. You know, now you're talking maybe something that's fairly formidable at the top of your rotation.
Yeah.
I don't know. Billy Beane's looking for bullpen arms. The Indians got a lot of young bullpen arms. Maybe they can unload some of those on Billy Beane for Brett Anderson.
Yeah. Well, should we move on to the hot stove? Touch on some sizzling hot stove topics.
Oh, there's so many.
Let's hit some of the bigger ones. Some of the ones that affect our tri-state club specifically. Detroit Tigers general manager Dave Dombrowski has stated that Miguel Cabrera will be moving to first base, and former Erie Seawolf Nick Castellanos will be manning the third base bag this season.
Oh boy!
This is according to Jason Beck on Detroit's website. He said, Dombrowski was reported as saying, "We're looking at Nick Castellanos to be our third baseman. Miguel Cabrera is going to play first base for us. We've discussed that with him. I guess we can make that official." He guesses it's official. He guesses.
All right. Well, it's gonna be fun to see Nick Castellanos at third. That's for sure.
I loved how Frank Dombrowski was. He's like, Nick Castellanos is an average defensive third baseman. He's never going to be an all-star. I'm like, dude, you guys know you just had Miguel Cabrera at third base last season, right? Just so we're all aware. Average is a very big upgrade at third base for you.
They don't care about anything but home runs in Detroit.
Yeah.
That's all they care about. Defense, that's not important. Do you think Nick Castellanos, we're talking about he's solid, he's average. That's the Dave Dombrowski quote. But do you think he can handle third?
Oh yeah. I don't think there's any question that he's a major league caliber player. You know, we've saw that with his stint in Erie. I think he's going to be a good major league baseball player. I feel like this might be a year earlier than they wanted. I feel like they maybe wanted to give him another year down in Toledo to continue to develop, but I think he's going to be a very good major league baseball player.
I don't have any problem with his bat. I question, you know, I mean, I know Cabrera's awful at third. Don't get me wrong. So it's going to look like Travis Fryman out there probably. But it'll be fun to watch, see how he handles it, you know, because I think – I totally agree. Like you said, I think it's definitely a year before they really wanted to do it.
Right, right. And obviously I think if they knew that this was going to be the way the scenario was going to play out, they probably wouldn't have tried to transition him into the outfield. So whatever. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm excited to see that Seawolf out there. The Tigers, they've been really, really active. You know, aside from the Doug Fister trade, which still doesn't make any sense. They also signed closer Joe Nathan after trading Prince Fielder for Ian Kinsler. Nathan was signed for 2 years, $20 million, with an option year for $10 million. Dombrowski stated they wanted to create some financial flexibility. I guess that's the purpose. The crux of the whole Fister move is it saved them a couple million dollars to potentially look at re-signing some of their key players like Max Scherzer, which I stated all along, if you're going to try and make a move to re-sign someone, you know, if you're moving Prince Fielder and you're moving Doug Fister, I think Scherzer's the guy that you really want to invest in to pair up at the top of that Detroit rotation.
I guess, but man, you're going to pay a lot this year to sign him long-term.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely are.
Oh,
boy. So the Yankees, they were the other team that's just been trying to stick it to the Boston fans. They signed Brian McCann to that 5-year, $85 million contract, and then they just went out and got Jacoby Ellsbury for 7 years and $153 million.
Yeah, as my friend Lucas commented on our Facebook page, shades of Johnny Damon.
that's all. This was just the Yankees were just trying to figure out a way to get people to stop talking about a Boston World Series victory. Yeah. That's all that was.
They're like, ha, take that.
Now, one of the players the Yankees might be losing
is Cano.
Right. They have Robinson Cano, who's looking at potentially changing coasts and flying out to Seattle.
I have some things to say about this Robinson Cano situation, all right?
All right, lay it on me, daddy-o.
First of all, Jacoby Ellsbury is a good player when he's healthy. But I think he's hit 13 home runs. I heard someone say this, 13 home runs over the last two seasons. Is that correct?
I'll pull that up and double check. But you think about Jacoby Ellsbury's home run productivity, and it basically all came in one season.
Right. he's a little bit of an injury risk, right?
Right.
And it's $153 million.
That's a lot of money.
I think I'd rather sign Robinson Cano, even if it was going to take $50 million more.
Right, yeah, because it's not like you're hurting for that extra $50 million.
I mean, don't you think?
I definitely would. I don't understand why they want to get into this little, like...
Robinson Cano has been the keystone of that offensive lineup for the last 4 years, at least. I mean, ever since A-Rod started his downward trend into obscurity, we'll just leave it at that. The one guy in that lineup they can count on is Cano. And they just jettisoned him to save $50 million on a guy who doesn't have a lot of power and is an injury risk.
Yeah, they're spending a lot of money for a leadoff hitter.
Not to mention, okay, that in the outfield, they already have Gardner. They already have Suzuki. You know, Ichiro. They already have Soriano's still under contract, right?
Yep.
And they have, I don't know, more money than I'll ever earn in my life invested in Vernon Wells. I mean, it just seems to me like, okay, an outfield of Soriano, Gardner, Ichiro with a fourth outfielder of Wells. That's a decent outfield. It's an expensive outfield, but it's okay. At second base right now, you're getting ready to run out Eduardo Nunez.
Yeah, boy, when you put it like that.
Well, and here's my other problem, okay? Who exactly is going to pitch for the Yankees this year? I mean, CeCe was a little rough last year, and that's putting it kindly.
Right.
And then you've got Nova, Phelps, Pineda, some guy named A. Warren. I don't even know who that is. I don't follow the Yankees every day, but I don't know who Adam Warren is, and he's their number five starter on their website.
Right.
And then after that, they have Vidal Nuno.
Yeah, it gets thin pretty quick there.
It just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know.
I'm totally 100% with you. I don't understand it either. Cano, it seems like that'd be the guy that you want to invest in.
Well, okay, and here's the flip side of this. If I'm Robinson Cano, okay, I'm signed with Jay-Z now, right? He's my boy, and he's gonna make the Robinson Cano brand. That's not going to happen in Seattle.
Oh, I bet he's going to be on a bag of Seattle's best coffee before you know it.
Seattle stinks.
Oh, I smell a meme coming on, by the way.
Tim Cano is not going to change that.
Yeah, no, he's not. He'll make them better, and maybe he'll make it more attractive for players to come in, and maybe by the time his seven-year contract's over, Seattle's better. Who knows?
Wait, let me pull up the Mariners roster. Hold on. I mean... This is screams Mariners to me. Like, let's sign Eric Bedard.
Yeah, this you know what this screams to me? I need to save my job. Robinson Cano might help.
Like, I heard on MLB Network them talking about they plugged Robinson Cano into the Mariners batting order, right? And they're like, okay, so you're gonna lead off with Dustin Ackley, and then Nick Franklin, and then you're gonna have Cano. And then batting cleanup, you're going to have Kyle Seager. I was like, oh, no, no. Awful. What a horrible waste of $200 million. and probably more than that, because I know the Mariners, they'll overpay. They won't just beat the Yankees offer, they'll destroy it.
Right.
Oh, awful. Absolutely awful.
Yeah, I don't like that move for the Yankees. Maybe the Yankees realize, hey, Cano wants to keep his brand in New York because Jay-Z's not going to want him going to Seattle to try and market. But I don't know. I don't know. It's a crazy, crazy world we live in, man.
Too much money.
So is there anything else we really want to hit on? I think that hits on all the bigger ones for me. Anything else you want to talk about this hot stove season?
No, although, you know, I wouldn't be surprised for the Tigers to replace their monster Prince Fielder contract with another monster just as franchise-killing contract.
Are you thinking like Shin-Soo Chu?
I'm thinking like Chu. I'm thinking at least Nelson Cruz, like way overpaying for Nelson Cruz. You know what? I wouldn't be shocked. Dave Dombrowski's done this to us before. I wouldn't be shocked if all of a sudden the Tigers sign Robinson Cano.
Where do you... No, that can't happen. You just traded for Ian Kinsler.
So put Ian Kinsler at third base and put Castellanos in the outfield.
Eh, all right. Well, you talked me into that one pretty quickly.
That didn't take much.
Let's do it. Why not?
I'm telling
that sounds you. Like something I would do on my MLB 2K video game.
Exactly. And that's how Dave Dombrowski runs his team.
That's how he trades. He decides if it's a good trade on MLB 2K.
Right, right. If it helps the team on there, he doesn't.
This is a good trade. Yes, I will trade Doug Fister.
Yeah.
what a great way to general manage if that's the way he does. MLB 2K general manager.
You know what I want to do? I want to go back to that article we talked about last week and see what they said the Tigers were going to do.
Yeah, yeah, we should go see that.
Not right now, but
yeah,
they might not have done anything as crazy as what Dave Dombrowski actually has done.
Yeah, Dave Dombrowski kind of made that seem a little more reasonable.
Yeah. Oh, trade Prince Fielder. Oh, trade Doug Fister for nothing.
They're like, wait, we're just going to trade Doug Fister to save money?
Spend $20 million on Joe Nathan.
Oh, boy. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us today after that sizzling hot stove. We'd like to thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes that you give us a rate and review. That helps drive up your popularity. You can check us out on the web at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. And you can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.